directly to State Board Business. And as always, we do have on our e-board site, and it may be going up, our mission, vision, and guiding principles, just so those might be new for anyone that's listening. It's also on our website, it's on our e-board site. So we have committee and meeting reports next under this session of our meeting. Board members have the opportunity to provide information, written reports on any events or committee meetings they attended. And I don't know if anyone, they're compiled, they're sent around to everyone. And then we also have the opportunity, if people want to add something while we are here tonight. I actually came from the University of Delaware trustee meeting. I did miss much of it as I was driving here, unfortunately, but that was today. So I know Mr. Lofink actually was visiting schools, and I can't remember what the other was off the top of my head. But I don't know if anyone else wants to add something, or Mr. Lofink, if you wanted to share any additional comments.
Just very briefly, again, I really was impressed with Eastside Charter, with their structure, with the project that they have. That it, speaking of community collaboration, I was really impressed with that. And one of the things is that, it, quite frankly, for Northeast Wilmington, it is a neighborhood school. It is a neighborhood school that is going to be that is currently and will continue to be a critical component of that community. But that's it, Madam President.
No, thank you for those comments, and I'm glad you were able to get there. Any other questions or comments or anything that the board wanted to share at this point in time?
I just wanted to briefly state that, and again, I missed the last meeting, so I didn't get a chance to submit a report or share about it. But I had the pleasure of attending Coomba Academy's 20th anniversary gala that was held on April the 8th. And it was a very reflective, festive, fun, inspiring event. And it really was a reminder of what the promise, I think, of the charter schools are, and sort of, you know, sort of bringing us back to our earlier conversation. It was a reminder about the innovation that can take place to really carry forth transformation in a community. And one of the points that I wanted to raise earlier that I didn't sort of connect it to this, and the real reason why I'm speaking up now, is I think that we should look to continue what we did tonight in some way, shape, or form on a regular basis, maybe not every meeting, but I think to invite some of the, I think, charter school community members to come in and speak about the innovation points. I think we've highlighted and leaned into this idea that that was the premise of the law, was to innovate and then share that out in a publicly facing way for the benefit of the entire public education community. And I'm sure that that's happening specifically within education circles, but I think it would benefit our board tremendously to hear some of those stories directly from charter leaders. And I know from my discussions with some of the leadership at Coomba during that event, that there was interest in doing that before the state board. So great event, and thanks for listening.
No, thank you. Thank you for sharing. I'm glad you attended that as well. Anything else from board members?
I just have one quick thing. I think I shared at the last meeting that I attended the NASB legislative conference, and it was a terrific in-person event, but I was struck by the fact that there was not one teacher on any panel or session that they put on, despite there being multiple teacher members at the event. So I did just share that with NASB there, right there at the event. And since then, they've invited me to take part in a focus group on accountability and assessment and participate in a webinar on secondary trauma that teachers are experiencing. So I'm pleased to see that impact of my voice on just noticing who's there at the table. And I would urge everyone to continue to talk to educators whenever you can and include them in conversations that you're having around you know, all these topics in education. And I think this idea of secondary trauma, this is one of the factors for the off-ramp, right? And so how can that be identified and then addressed? So I'm just more involved in NASB, and I'm happy to be so.
No, I think that's great. And actually, glad you spoke up, because it reminded me of one of the other projects that you've been kind of spearheading for us,
right,
which is the whole equity and diversity. And we are going to have Dr. Jarvis coming in. And so we are trying to get that firmed up from a schedule standpoint. So please be on the lookout for dates, and we want to get that in. We're going to have two sessions And so I think we're really excited about that, but I know that's something that Wendy's really been driving. So we'll get those scheduled. I know we've circulated dates, but we're getting there. So that is to come over the summer. And I'm looking at Jenna knowing that she's not going to be doing it. It will be happening. So anything else that people want to share?
So this is very new, so I haven't like reached out to anyone about it yet or told anyone about it. But I did just receive a $10,000 grant to host a event this fall. It's an online conference to have a conversation around equity in our school districts around LGBTQIA plus students and how to be more accommodating of them to create safe places in our schools. It's called Proud Schools, and we are looking for speakers and that type of thing. So I just want to put that out there so we can like get a jump on everything.
I think that's fantastic. Congratulations.
Thank you.
That is awesome. We'll have to catch up more and think about what resources you need and how we can support that.
And I'll just put a note out there so I won't forget. Congratulations, number one, on the grant. That's awesome.
Thank you.
And relatedly, please reach out to me because I don't want to trust my memory on this. I think my my law firm may, we do a lot of work in the space of LGBTQA rights. So reach out to me. I think there may be some interest in some resources that could support that conversation from a speaker standpoint and maybe some other standpoints.
All right, perfect. Thank you.
Thank you. Anything else? Two really valuable things that they weren't going to speak up tonight. All right, great. So the next thing on our agenda is just running through some standard stuff. Regular meeting calendar, this is for action. The proposed dates for the FY23 regular meeting are, I don't know if we're going to pull them up, but they were provided to everyone. And I'm just going to say, I know these are looking a year out. And last year we did our very best and then we ended up on a holiday by accident. You know, if there are any known dates with this, I don't think that anyone's communicated any problems with those. So we'd like to make a motion to approve this. You know, clearly we've had to sometimes change them, but this is, you know, we need to approve our calendar. And they're generally the third Thursday of the month. So with that, does anyone have any questions or comments before we make a motion to approve it? Okay, I'm going to take that silence for now. Is there a motion to approve the fiscal year 23 regular meeting calendar as presented?
So moved.
Lo Fink, second.
Thank you. All those in favor, please say aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. All right, the next item on the agenda is the FY23 budget. So we have some budget items. These were also all circulated. A couple of points that we would particularly note is the continuation of the eBoard service. This is the hub that we provides all of our board meeting materials, board members, members of the public. I will say that we are scheduled to formally approve the full budget at the June or July meeting, but we have to meet certain timelines that are required by DOE for pre-approval of this particular line item on the budget. So we are just going to request that the board take action to approve the state board subscription to eBoard services. That cost is $2,750 for fiscal year 23. We will have the full budget in front of us next month, depending on it, assuming that it gets approved. And are there any questions from board members with respect to this particular line item of the budget? Okay, is there a motion to approve the FY23 budget item as presented?
Lo Fink, so moved.
Second.
All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The motion carries. Now we have the secretary's report or executive director's report. Ms. Honor, if you wanted to go ahead and just share highlights.
Sure. You have a copy of my report. It's fairly short this month since we just met 2 weeks ago. But want to highlight a couple of items. So related to the NASB grant, Rowan has been working on the deliverables that we talked about last month. She's going to talk about those in just a couple of minutes here. We also met with NASB to discuss updates, and they were really excited to hear about what we've been working on and potentially have some resources for us to do some technical assistance to move forward. Some conversations maybe with the department and PSB and some districts. So that is on the table as well. We shared the research with Dr. Bradshaw and hoping to share with someone within the department this month too, just to make sure that this is kind of continued through not just our board, but through other avenues as well. As I transition, Dr. Noble has agreed to be the lead on the NASB grant in my absence. So we'll make sure that she has everything that she needs to be successful. And if you have any questions or want to participate, she would be your point of contact on that. The only other thing I wanted to share before we dive into the research is that you may recall I was working with the UD Analytics course on two data reviews this past semester. One around student absenteeism and one around educator experience. They just sent me their final products in the last day or two. So I will be sharing those out to you so you can see the final presentations as well as kind of their conclusions and their recommendations. So be on the lookout for that. Happy to answer any questions on my written report. If not, I suggest that we move over to the research that Burrell's going. Any questions before we move on? All right, so we are going to. All right, so I think we're going to start with the early literacy research that Berlin's been working on. So you may recall I talked at the last meeting that she's really been working on three deliverables. There's kind of four in our NASB grant. So one was a review of all of the different early literacy roles within our system, both those roles that are have specific requirements via regulation, and then others that are sort of district approved or district decided on. So we have that spreadsheet as well as three that she'll be talking a little bit about today. One is a review of the assessments related to early literacy, and then a scan of what some other states are doing around teacher preparation and professional development. So I will turn it over to her.
Great, sounds good. If we can pull up the first slide here. So in terms of assessments, Delaware requires elementary educators to pass one of two exam options that specifically address English and reading. According to the National Council on Teacher Quality, neither of these fully assesses the science of reading. This council published a teacher prep document and found that only 20 states fully measure knowledge in the science of reading for all of their elementary teacher candidates. They listed 18 licensing exams that they believe fully assess the science of reading. Many of those were state-specific exams, so we ended up looking at five of the most relevant in more detail and comparing them with Delaware's exam options. Generally, the exams that fully assess the science of reading are a bit longer. They include essay questions. They do tend to be slightly higher in cost, and they include more categories that assess competencies like lesson planning, teaching methods, and assessing student progress. In the table on this slide, which I realize is a little bit difficult to read, but there's a copy of it in the brief, I compare one of Delaware's exams, which is the ETS 5002, with a Virginia-specific ETS exam that does fully assess the science of reading, and Virginia actually requires teachers to pass both of those. In addition, in this brief, we looked at Delaware's general elementary educator certification exams, which are not specific to English. They include subjects like math, science, social studies. And we compared those with Minnesota and Pennsylvania's exams, which NCTQ indicates do fully assess the science of reading. We also, even though these were not included in that NCTQ document, we looked at some reading specialist exams. Just to get a frame of reference, Delaware does not currently require a specific exam for reading specialist certification. So there's some information about some of those exam options in the brief. And one area for further research that we identified is looking at what the assessment requirements are for elementary educators in surrounding states, since Delaware does have a lot of teachers coming in from out of state. And if we go to the next slide, I looked at the Education Commission of the States, and they have a tool where you can search legislation. And within the last 3 years, there have been 47 policies enacted in the US that address reading and literacy, which is a lot. We focused on a few that were the most relevant to the science of reading. And in this brief, we looked at legislation that addresses educator preparation programs. Many of these pieces of legislation are larger, and they address teacher prep, professional development, and additional literacy education areas. So I do reference some of these pieces of legislation again in my next slide. But in this one, we looked at how they are implementing requirements for educator prep programs, what the accountability measures are, and most of these were passed relatively recently, so there hasn't necessarily been a ton of movement on implementation. But one that we looked at was the Rhode Island Right to Read Act, which passed in 2019. This one requires educator prep programs to include instruction of the characteristics of dyslexia and evidence-based interventions. By 2025, these programs must include its science of reading program descriptions, both in their annual report and on their website. A public school district that employs an educator in violation of this standard may be placed on probationary status. And if that happens, the district must send written notification to the parents. Lastly, educator prep programs that do not comply with the requirements may be subject to penalties up to having their approval revoked. We looked at the Tennessee Literary Success Act of 2021. This one requires the Department of Education to develop foundational literacy skills standards for educator prep programs that are working with K-3 teaching candidates in particular. They have not done this yet, but the bill does state that by 2023, teacher candidates and those seeking licensure renewal will need to pass an approved Tennessee reading instruction test. This test has not yet been identified or developed. The bill provides an implementation timeline. So by July of this year, educator prep programs seeking approval or renewal must include coursework grounded in the science of reading. But the bill does not specify what the accountability measures should be. We looked at Louisiana Bill 222, which passed in 2021. This one requires that by July of this year, the State Board of Education revise teacher certification requirements and educator prep program requirements to ensure that K-3 teachers have foundational literacy skills. They do specify in the bill what those standards should include. The focus is primarily on how to effectively teach and assess students, how to identify and provide effective intervention for students with literacy deficiencies. And there were some changes in Louisiana that predate this piece of legislation that were interesting. They conducted a survey of their educators and found that 41% of those surveyed did not feel prepared to teach students how to read. In response to that, they developed a teacher mentoring program. And the State Board of Education has since established standards for that mentor program and approved 29 mentor training providers. And now all educator prep programs do have to include a residency in their program. And if we go to the last slide on this one.
Can I just jump in really quick on
yes.
this? So we wanted to do this research partly because SB 133 passed last year and the board has been really interested in early literacy. We do not, so the department will have to look at updating regulation 290 related to that, that bill that passed. And I think some of the things Rowan just talked about are relevant for how they might include that. The board doesn't approve regulation 290. That's not one that comes in front of you, but I think related to your interests, we wanted to share that also related to stuff that the P20 council has shown interest in working on, as well as, you know, the teacher preparation pieces really align ultimately with the teacher certification pieces, which are the pieces that come out of PSB, and they really need to work hand in hand. So even though you are not responsible for approving ultimately the teacher preparation regulation or any teacher preparation programs, it does really fit together with some of your other roles. So we wanted to make sure that you had that context, especially as the department will be looking at updating that regulation, and if the board had any feedback to kind of share as that happens over the coming months and years.
I would just have one thought as I'm listening to a lot of those, and obviously that's such a priority for everyone. Look at literacy across the country. But how involved are the higher eds in that? Because, you know, the students that are coming out saying that they don't feel prepared, that's the higher ed's responsibility. So I would just be curious, and this is obviously a topic for another night perhaps, but I just found that really interesting because we've talked a little bit about in the past that if we change our regulations to some degree, it forces the higher eds to change things at their end as well. So it's just more an observation because I don't want to get too far in the weeds, but I just think that's interesting because you can't fix it if you don't have the higher eds as part of the conversation. I know you may know more on this than I.
Well,
I'm sure you know more on this than I.
Per the Sturgeon bill that passed last year, any teacher prep program, early childhood and or elementary teacher prep program will require high quality instructional material tied to the science of reading. Jenna, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think that the programs are required to have that content in place. I want to say it's 23, 24 school year. Am I?
A little later than I think it's the first approval after a certain year, maybe 24, 25. And so it's still probably 3 or 4 years off before they need to implement it.
I mean, the reason being, of course, the higher eds just need time, you know, to sort of staff up, right? Training for their own staff and their own curriculum and content that they're using. But and then we have a couple of science of reading bills this year that really go hand in hand with that original bill. And while they haven't passed yet, they do appear to be on track for passage.
I didn't mean to derail you.
Oh, no problem at all.
Thank you. This is really interesting.
And this last slide is about teacher professional development legislation, and this relates to SCR 82, which passed the Senate in Delaware and is awaiting action in the House of Representatives. So the Rhode Island Right to Read Act also addresses professional development. By the 23-24 school year, educators must complete professional development to demonstrate either proficiency of or awareness in the science of reading and structured literacy. Whether the educator needs to demonstrate proficiency or awareness depends on their role within the school. If they're pre-K through 5 teachers or reading specialists, they need to demonstrate proficiency, which is a bit more involved, whereas math and science teachers need to demonstrate just awareness. The Department of Education has approved 14 providers of training that address proficiency. So teachers that complete this training can apply for a literacy dyslexia endorsement. And teachers can also fulfill this requirement by passing 1 of 2 approved assessments instead of taking that training. The Department of Education developed a free self-paced online awareness training that includes 5 interactive courses and 10 total hours of content. And the professional development is a requirement of current educators, but it is not linked to certification renewal. Teachers and local education agencies do need to maintain those training records, and the Department of Education is working to develop a data collection mechanism to ensure some level of accountability. By 24-25, the percentage of educators in a given LEA meeting the requirements will be publicly reported. We looked at Arkansas, who passed the Right to Read Act in 2017, and it was amended in 2021. This requires that by the 23-24 school year, teachers demonstrate either proficiency or awareness in the science of reading. K through 6 classroom teachers and all special education teachers need to meet the proficiency requirements, and all other educators must demonstrate awareness. They have developed 20 pathways for educators to demonstrate proficiency. Each has 2 phases. So phase 1 involves completing a training or assessment, and the second phase requires educators to demonstrate their knowledge of instruction. So that might include observation by an assessor. Pathways for those required to show awareness include either a 14-session online option or 1 of 7 different in-person options. And districts do have the option of requesting approval to use a different pathway that they identify. Colorado passed the Reading to Ensure Academic Development Act in 2012. Current K through three teachers need to complete 45 hours of evidence-based reading training. This will extend to new teachers in the coming school year, and teachers only need to meet this requirement once. There are 7 options to complete the requirement that range from passing an assessment to completing a college course or approved training program or earning a reading specialist endorsement. The READ Act allocated $30 million in intervention funding that districts become ineligible for if their teachers do not complete this training. This act and a few of the others include individual student intervention plans. So teachers are required to identify K through three students with reading deficiencies and develop a READ plan. And they report on those to the district, and that sort of guides some of those funding decisions. We looked at the Mississippi Literacy-Based Promotion Act of 2013. This is an act that places emphasis on K through three reading skills. So the lowest performing students on assessments are not promoted to fourth grade. This bill states that training will be made available to teachers, but it is not a requirement. However, they do pay for substitutes so that teachers have the option of completing the training during the school day. The Department of Education began providing the language essentials for teachers of reading and spelling, the LETRS training, to K through three teachers. And North Carolina, Ohio, and Arkansas use this training as well. And they also provide literacy coaches to the state's lowest performing schools. And then the last one we looked at in this section was the North Carolina Excellent Public Schools Act of 2021. This act defines the science of reading and requires educators to participate in professional development. This one also includes individual intervention plans for students. It establishes an early literacy program within the Department of Public Instruction. They require the LETRS training for pre-K through 5 teachers, and elementary teachers need 3 continuing education credits in literacy. It's not entirely clear at this point, since it is a relatively new piece of legislation, what their accountability measures are to ensure that teachers comply with the requirement. But at some point, LEAs will have to submit some kind of planning and reporting to the Department of Public Instruction. So that's early literacy.
Thank you. Any questions or comments from Ms. Sharp? Okay, thank you. Thank you very much. Now, the next thing that we have on the agenda is more information on charter school. I'm sorry. There's been a lot of questions, obviously, just because this has been, we've just spent a lot of time on it. It's one of our bigger responsibilities. And there's been a lot of questions from board members. So Ms. Zahner and Ms. Sherman worked on pulling together some information. So
I guess I'll just give the context. As I mentioned earlier, this is sort of a response to some questions that we got about data, and we thought it might be helpful to just have a sort of broader look at the data itself. And so we've really kind of organized it into 4 sets of briefs. You can see the outline of how it's organized here. And we have 1 slide on each. We sort of have the drafts available to you. We've not published them since they are still a work in progress, but hoping that you can either, we'll go through some of the data we have so far. You can raise questions that you have that maybe aren't answered, or any comments about what we have so far that might help inform your work in this space in the future. So I will turn it over to Rob.
If we want to go to the next slide, the first brief in the series focuses on how charter schools fit into the public school landscape in Delaware, and it also takes a look at governance. So currently there are 23 charter schools operating in the state of Delaware, soon to be 24. 21 of those are state authorized, and 2 of those are authorized by the Red Clay Consolidated School District. 15 are located in Newcastle County, 6 are in Kent County, and 2 are in Sussex County. And then in terms of the grade levels they serve, for each grade level K through 12, there are between 11 and 16 charter schools that serve each grade. So the average is 14 schools per grade level. We did pull re-enrollment rates from each school's annual reports, and in the 2020-2021 school year, the percentage of students re-enrolled in charter schools ranged from 60% to 97%, with a median of 89% re-enrollment. We do provide a summary of major and minor modifications over time. And between 2017 and 2022, there were a total of 33 modifications. So that's an average of just over 6 per year. We looked at the history of closed charter schools, and between the years 2000 and 2019, there were 13 charter schools that closed. And the major trends in terms of contributing factors were low enrollment or concerns regarding academic performance. And if we want to move to the next slide. The second brief takes a deeper dive on enrollment trends and also looks at how student demographics at charter schools compare with traditional public schools. So as of the 21-22 school year, 73% of all students in Delaware attended a traditional public school, 5% attended a VOTEC, 11% attended a charter school, 3% were homeschooled, and 8% attended private school. Those percentages do vary by county. So in Newcastle, 15% of students attended a charter school, whereas in Kent County, it was 8%, and Sussex had the lowest at 4%. We looked at charter school enrollment trends over time. So between the years of 2018 and 2022, there was an 8% increase in the overall number of students attending Delaware charter schools. And based on projections from renewal applications, we estimate that enrollment in charter schools will increase about 16% over the next 4 years, and that does take into account the new school that was just approved. We broke out those enrollment trends by county and found that between 2018 and 2022, Newcastle County traditional public schools saw a 1% decrease in enrollment, while charter school enrollment increased 4%. In Kent County, both traditional public and charter schools both saw a 2% increase. And in Sussex, traditional public schools increased 3% and charter schools increased 92%, but they did go that during one of those years from having 1 to 2 charter schools. So that makes sense. And then in terms of demographics, when we looked holistically at student demographics in all charter schools, it looks like they serve between 11 and 12% of all student populations, which makes sense because they do serve about 11% of the public student population. And that's what this chart is showing. But there are a number of schools that are serving a higher percentage of certain populations. For example, African-American students make up 30% of the traditional public school population on average, but there are 11 charter schools where African-American students make up a higher percentage of the student body, with the highest being 96%. 2 schools serve a higher percentage of Hispanic or Latino students. The state average is 18%, and there are charter schools who are serving up to 78% of their student body being Hispanic or Latino. 12 charter schools serve a higher percentage of low-income students than the state average of 24%, with the highest being 70%. 5 charter schools serve a higher percentage of students with disabilities than the state average of 17%, with the highest being 63%. And 3 charter schools serve a higher percentage of English language learners than the state average of 10%, with the highest being 61%. And we can move to the next slide. So the next brief focuses on academic achievement. So we look at charter school testing data compared with the state averages from all public schools. And for elementary students, we were looking at smarter assessments in math and English. And for high school students, we looked at SAT scores. And I will note that there's been lower participation in exams in recent years due to the pandemic. And some schools with small populations do routinely redact exam data to protect student privacy. So we were not able to look at all charter schools for each of these sections. We collected data on 18 K-8 charter schools and found that 8 of those are performing above the state average in terms of the percentage of their student population who are considered proficient in English, and 7 are above the state average in math proficiency. 6 of 9 high schools that we examined performed above the state average in both English and math. And then we also looked at growth from year to year and found that 13 of 17 schools were at or above the state average in terms of English growth, and 8 of 17 schools were at or above the state average in terms of math growth. And the brief does go into a lot more detail and provides definitions and more specifics about the scores. Next, we looked at attendance rates. So 12 of 22 schools that we collected data on were at or above the state average for on-track attendance, which refers to the number of students who missed less than 10% of school days. And we do note that attendance may have been affected by the COVID-19 pandemic since we collected data during 2020-2021. We also looked at graduation and college enrollment rates. 9 of the 10 charter high schools that we looked at were at or above the state average graduation rate, and 3 of those schools have a 100% graduation rate. 6 schools were at or above the state average for college enrollment. And the last thing that we looked at in this brief was student behavior in terms of incidents of violence and suspensions. And as a whole, charter schools tend to have lower incidents of violence and suspensions, but we did note in the brief any that were above the state average, and we provide more definitions for those behavior incidents. And we can go to our last slide. The last brief focuses on educators in Delaware charter schools. So in terms of the number of full-time equivalent classroom teachers in the state, in 2021, there were 9,955 teachers in all public schools in Delaware. And in charter schools, there were 1,052. So that's about 11% of the public classroom teacher population. The percentage of early career classroom teachers, which is defined as educators with 4 years or less experience, was 18% for all Delaware public schools and 35% for charter schools. 18 of the 23 charter schools have a higher percentage of early career teachers than the state average. 15 charter schools have a higher percentage of teachers working out of field than the state average. And in the brief, we do provide a breakdown of the reasons that those teachers are considered to be working out of field at each charter school. We looked at teacher retention rates at the charter schools and found that 10 schools have higher retention rates than the state average. We also looked at average educator salaries over time and found that charter teachers are paid lower salaries on average than traditional public school teachers, though this is likely related to educator experience. And the last thing we looked at was teacher and administrator demographics. And we found that generally charter schools have a slightly higher percentage of women and minorities working in both of those fields.
Thank you. Kendall, do you mind if I ask a question?
Of course not.
Why do you think there's so many more early career teachers in the charter schools? You can answer it anywhere.
So, not yelling. Part of it is that we used to get a lot of Teach for America, so that's their early career. Also, funding, right? So, yes, sometimes we pay less because of the experience, but sometimes we pay less because we just don't have the same funding. So it's based on what we can afford, and so that's a big part of it. But also, I think that sometimes there is more, educators that are experienced doesn't mean you don't look for flexibility, but sometimes there are younger teachers that are like, oh yeah, let's go, because the flexibility in a charter school is a, you know, something that they want, maybe, and so they are attracted to it. That does not mean that we don't have educators that are experienced that look for that too, so.
Yeah, that's fine. I was just curious. I mean, there's a lot of interesting data in there. I mean, and I know there's been board members that have just been asking lots of questions. So I think it's just really valuable to have it all compiled in one place. And I know there's a lot more behind this. So thank you. It just struck me. I was just curious. Any questions or comments? Actually, because, you know, Kendall is at the table too. So you can ask questions of Ms. Sherman or Ms. Bassett.
I don't know who would be the one to answer this. This is Shelby Ferris speaking. It said earlier in the report that there are certain schools that have higher populations of, let's say, African-American, Latino. Is that because they are actively seeking out those populations, or is that just something that's like naturally happening?
So both. right? So their missions may be where they're located. So, and a big reason why charter schools were started was to serve the underserved communities. And in many cases, those are in low income or high minority communities. And so that's where you're located. That's what your community looks like. And that's what your school looks like. So they want it to be that way. And it just naturally happens because of where they're located.
I just want to say great work. This data is really interesting. And it's great for us to be able to look at it this way. I'd love to see an overlay of the assessment data with the educator data, with the demographic data. So like, where do you have like a cross analysis of those points?
So you're trying to find out what's driving. So is it
exactly
that you have less educated right. teachers, and then you have schools that are not having as
or higher retention.
Or exactly.
Or less violence and suspensions. What's going on in those schools? Which demographics are we talking about? And start to tease out some of the success factors. Or just know, this is more like a wonder for me, and then start to notice some of these things.
I think it's really valuable too, because to your point, when you're comparing yourself to a school that has a lot more resources, then that growth factor is more important versus the absolute score. So I do think those are good questions. Any other questions or comments?
I would just make a comment that charter schools very much like traditional schools are experiencing real challenges with attracting, but especially retaining teachers in their highest need schools. So an affluent suburban school, charter school, or traditional school, it's much easier to retain staff than it is in a more urban, diverse school. It's you know, virtually the same challenge, and you're probably going to see attendance rates very similar. You know, people are quick to point out the differences between charter schools and traditionals. They're, when you actually look at it, I mean, even the flexibility, you know, you go into it, spend 2 hours, you know, unannounced, by the way, and so you don't get the dog and pony show at either traditional or charter. Just go in and actually follow kids or follow a teacher for like 2 hours. And then go to a traditional school or vice versa. The flow of the day is far more similar than it is different. There are a couple of exceptions to the rule, especially like with First State Montessori and a few others. But you know, we have a lot more in common than we do differences, and more the reason why there should be a whole lot more cooperation and collaboration. But anyhow, just
can I add to that? So I have the honor to know a lot of the district superintendents and to speak with them a lot. I'm not going to call them out. So there is at least one district superintendent that I said to one day, I said, look, is there more flexibility that you would want that I could advocate for? Because while I am the charter school advocate, I'm actually an advocate for all kids. I don't care what kind of school you go to. Is it great for you? Great. And what could we do better for our educators, regardless of where they are? And this superintendent said, kind of, I don't need any more. I know what I can do. It's about the willpower and what you want to do. And this superintendent, this district has done a lot, and they are innovative, and they use the flexibilities that they can within the structure that they have. It can be done. There is an incredible amount of wonderful work happening in Delaware Public Schools, full stop, district and charter. And if you get a chance and you're on Twitter, there are two of us that use a hashtag DE Public Schools Provide. We're trying to share all the great stuff that is happening in all Delaware Public Schools, because it's out there. We are more similar than we are different, and we all care about kids.
Thank you, John. Any other questions or comments on anything that's just been shared or specific to the data?
I just want to thank Browen for her work and Jenna for overseeing it. I want to spend a little bit more time thinking about the implications of what I saw. The data just hit me like, wow, it was impressive on its face just to kind of see it presented in that way. But I want to spend some more time thinking about it and formulate some follow-up questions that follow from it. But on its face, I just am grateful for being able to present it in that way so that we could digest it and take appropriate next steps with it.
I will say that we have Rowan for one more month. And so to the extent you do have questions, one, you need to get them to her sooner than later. But I think Wendy's idea of finding out where we have those intersections and what we can derive from some of those overlaps, I think would be really valuable as one thing, as a takeaway. But again, we do have her for one more month. So I do think there's more that we can pull from this. Anything else? Okay, thank you. Thank you very much. And thank you, Kendall. All right, so next on the agenda is the legislative update and consideration. So this is just the summary of any education related bills. Again, this went around prior to the meeting. So this is really just an opportunity if anyone has any questions on those. Okay, I'm going to take that sounds for now. So we're going to move on to the secretary's report. Again, Secretary Holodeck provided a report prior to the meeting. And if there's anything that you wanted to share in addition to that or to highlight for us.
I just reported out, of course, 2 weeks ago. So just you have my short report here. I just want to point out 2 things. One is I'm very happy that we are recognizing our first ever cohort of behavioral health professionals of the year and that we're going to be surprising the state winner in person in the coming weeks. So I'm excited about that. And it's so appropriate considering what, we've been through over the past 2 years, and it's a shame we haven't been doing that much longer. And then I just wanted to share with the board that our own board member, Wendy Turner, she always joins the State Teachers of the Year when we meet, but she whispered an idea following our last state board meeting 2 weeks ago about supporting our Teachers of the Year with some, I'll describe it as social, emotional, and much more actually support. Wendy, would you be so kind just to give like a snapshot of like what you did with those teachers?
Sure. So I think I mentioned at the last board meeting that I attended the TAM Trauma Awareness Month kickoff event that was facilitated by DOE with partners, primarily Dr. Lawler, and it was such a great conversation. Shelby called it a tough conversation with heart, right? Talking about what students have been experiencing and where they feel like their needs are being met and not. And I just turned to Dr. Holodeck and I said, we need to do this with teachers. So you've got all these things that are intersecting, the shortage, the people leaving, trauma. And we have been focusing on a lot of it around our students for the past 5 years since I was a teacher of the year, which is great work. We really need to start thinking about it in the context of teachers. So we had this meeting and it was maybe 10 folks attended, which is, this time of year, people are burned out and busy, but I tried to lead a conversation where I explained this kind of format and just have people speak your truth. How are you doing? What's going on? What has worked well? What would you like to see? And so with this group of leaders that Joshua mentioned, they had come from all different, spaces in our system and have different areas of expertise. There's just a really honest conversation around what they thought. And again, I'll tell you over and over and over, I'll tell all of you, teachers are the most innovative people on the planet and they know how to solve problems. And so if we're gonna start to solve some of these problems, we've gotta engage teachers. And I think we had a great conversation that I kind of like moderated. And then we looked at a couple of articles, pieces of reporting around what people were doing to support teachers. And then I just, we left everyone with leading ideas and that went to Dr. Holodeck. And I know you're interested in continuing that conversation. And I spoke to Dr. Lawler about it recently. So I appreciated the opportunity and I think it's a direction we can go. And that ties into Josh's idea about an advocacy council with the Teachers of the Year, because they are leaders and innovators and problem solvers. And we can use that help in our system.
Yeah, I think we're due for a change with the Teachers of the Year in terms of what we do when we gather. Sure. So it's perfect timing. So thank you, Wendy. Yeah. That's my report.
Thank you. All right, so at this point in time, we have formal public comment. As a reminder, the board doesn't respond to questions or engage in dialogue with those offering comments during the board meeting. Opportunity to sign up for public comment was also available via email prior to this meeting. If you did not previously sign up to provide public comment and are logged in via the URL, please type your name, organization, and comment topic into the chat box now. If you're only participating via phone and wish to make verbal public comment, please log in via the meeting URL. Do we have anyone signed up? We have Kendall Massive representing the Delaware Tourist Club. And we will put up the time because yep. We have to do the same thing for you as we do.
Sure. Kendall Massive, Executive Director of the Delaware Charter Schools Network. So I wanted to tell you about a teacher who was our Delaware Charter Teacher of the Year in 2020. And I was remiss for letting you all know this, but she was nominated by me and was chosen to be one of 10 change makers for the National Alliance for Public Charter Schools. So one of 10 throughout the country because of her innovative work with her students and the community work. Her name is Melissa Tracy. She's at Odyssey Charter School. She has created a pathway, a food studies pathway. She is working with her students. She created a hydroponics lab and is feeding the community. 3,500 pounds of leafy greens go to the community every month, and her students do that work. And finally, around collaboration and innovation. So this innovation, she's collaborating with another teacher that I think a lot of us know, Karen Eller. And she helped Ms. Eller replicate the program that they're doing at Odyssey at her school, at the Byron School for the fourth grade. And the Odyssey students are mentoring her students in fourth grade to help them learn how to do that. Because, you know, that's what we're supposed to do. And we're doing it. So I'm really excited. Hopefully, maybe we can get you all to Odyssey because they're not doing any modifications anytime soon. And you can see the hydroponics lab and meet with the students that are doing this great work because she is a change maker and is being recognized for it nationally. So thank you.
Thank you very much. That's awesome. I'm so glad that you brought that to our attention. And congratulations to her and to Odyssey, and also the fact that it's being shared. Thank you. I just want to recognize, I appreciate your conversation tonight. I appreciate all the board members for the comments that they had. I think this was a really great meeting. So thank you. I know this is just the start of the conversation. And thank you, actually, to Kim Melodic, because I know that you're listening to all this. And so I appreciate that support. Is there a motion to adjourn tonight's meeting?
Low Fink, so moved.
Wait for a second. any objections? It is 7:42 p.m. and the meeting is adjourned.
Good night, everybody.
Good night. Thank you.
All right. Okay.